condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him. I found my mind in a brown paper.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Jack Silverman on the board, back from Indiana. You have to tell us all about that, how they closed down and everything when one of these days. I don't know about today, but one of these days we'll get that story out of you, Jack, and...
Well, I'm glad they opened up so we can make it back.
When's he going to go back? Like September?
No, I meant back here.
Yeah, well, no kidding. SP Futures up 29, NASDAQ Futures up 96. We had a feeling I should get long last night when we turned around. I did not. I mean, we're long all over, but we're not as long as you like to be when it's up, Brent. You always could be longer or shorter when it goes that way, right? Isn't that the idea?
Yep.
Anyway, Jack, welcome back, bud. So SP Futures up 28, NASDAQ Futures up 94, Dow Futures up 234, oil's up $2, so, really, oil, the June oil, it's back up from 11 to 22, but it's really just joining the rest of the curve, so the contango is greatly reduced, but still, the was way down at 11 or below zero last month, had really to do with supply issues and issues at Cushing, Oklahoma, and delivery issues. I don't think oil, you could never go out and buy oil for $11, even though, or $6, or minus $2. The future was all screwed up, but you could ever actually, well, I suppose you could go out in the Permian Basin and buy some there, but I don't know what good that does you, Brennan. You can't really put it in your car unless they refine it, right?
Well, you've got a big car. You can store some in there.
That's the truth. I mean, I could put a couple barrels in the back of the Suburban, that's for sure, but still, I couldn't really put it in a tank unless somebody did something with it first, right?
Yeah, you have to refine it a little bit, but still, you know, you carry around the raw oil, you know, you might find a market for it around town.
So you think I drove out to Bolingbrook and handed them a couple of barrels they'd wanted, or not? I don't think so. The refinery? just saying, you know.
Then wouldn't you have to pay them, too?
Yeah, you probably just have to pay them.
It's negative. You're the one who has to pay them. You have to pass along all of your profits to somebody to take it off your hands.
So we're starting to do some opening up in a few places, Brendan, and people are obviously eagerly watching that. We have other people that are dead set against it. We had all kinds of confrontations between police and people in New York to the point where that really sucks, Mayor de Blasio. I don't know. I think we have... How many dictators do we have now? A couple hundred? We have the big mayors, the little mayors, we have everybody, right?
And several governors.
Several governors. We have 50 governors. We got... President actually is... he's probably less of a dictator than the other people.
Well, that's because he doesn't know which side is going to come out on top as far as the public trust. Because whichever way the wind blows, he's going to claim the credit.
Well, absolutely. And so is... Well, they all are, too. I mean, it's... And some of it comes out yesterday with the huge New York Times article about, you know, lives versus going back to work. And, you know, it's not up to me or you really, Brennan, to, you know, tell people what they believe and what they shouldn't believe. But I think what we try and do on the show is educate people, at least to the crap that's swirling around them. I mean, yesterday that somebody would come out and say that decisions are between, you know, lives and money. I have really one answer to that. Duh, you think? When has it ever not been, Brennan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, is anybody...
That's a basic economics question.
Yeah, I mean, when does it ever not be? Does anybody think that working in a trading pit with the stress levels or working as a high-wire electrician where you think you can make more money is more dangerous than being the electrician in the aisle at the Home Depot? I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody think that when they built Hoover Dam that the high scalers, of which, you know, a lot of those, not a lot, but most of the deaths were high scalers, made more money than the guys who worked in the concrete plant? I mean, what are we, idiots? Are we idiots?
Well, even think about one very basic economics question that got us out of the Great Depression. What was it?
I didn't hear it totally. What'd you say?
What was it that got us out of the Great Depression?
A war.
World War II.
Yeah.
And what happens in war?
People
get, get shot.
Yeah. What is it? What was the guy in MASH? Rule number one is young men die. Rule number two is doctors can't change rule number one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Scary as it may seem. It's not as if you're not supposed to have any common sense. There is, but I mean, I could save more lives than the COVID tomorrow. I would say speed limit countrywide is 25 miles an hour, and if you go 30, you lose your car. You lose your license. How many lives would I save? Thousands a year.
Well, I think that's a false narrative. When I hear the question about how many lives people lose each year on the roads, that's a completely false analogy to the COVID. I mean, we have control. When we get in our car, we have control whether we drive 25 or 35 or 95 miles an hour. COVID and any kind of infection like that is a much different question to ask.
It's the same question. You know what the motivation is for higher speed limits? Did you ever read this, Brendan? I actually read this once. I couldn't believe it. I want the speed limit 25. I don't. Don't get me wrong. The motivation is if people drive slower, it takes them longer to meet their destination. That if it's one lifetime of time that you save versus somebody who dies, it's worth it. Did you ever read that? Does that sound scary to you?
It sounds realistic to me. I mean, but there's also another psychological component about just driving fast. I don't think it's necessary that I have to get there faster to save time, but there's an element of risk that we as humans enjoy. So driving fast is something that we enjoy doing.
But it's the same thing as the mask. It's the same thing. If you drive 80 miles an hour, I don't really care if you kill you, but I don't want you killing me. Which is mm-hmm. the same as this, right? I saw this morning driving in, I saw this bleep blow through two red lights. Okay, and speeding down whatever street I come in, or Des Plaines or whatever. He was going 60 miles an hour. Now, I don't really care if he runs into a light pole. I mean, I would rather he didn't, but I would care if he ran into you.
Yeah.
No. Same thing, right?
Absolutely understand. I understand your point.
I mean, drive home from the Stevenson now that the traffic is nothing. And the speed limit's 55. Go 70 or 75, Brendan. It's like you're parked.
Yeah. No, when we're going back and forth to Michigan, it's the same way.
No, okay.
It's
but I'm saying, it's not like... I'm not drawing necessarily a parallel. What I'm saying is we make these decisions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a trade-off. What kind of a... The jobs that are more dangerous have always paid more money. Do you think the guy who worked in the steel mill every day... Or did those kinds of things with all the, you know, the pollution and the heat and God knows what. He didn't realize that was probably more dangerous than working in the paint aisle at Sears. I mean, come on. Nobody's that stupid, Brendan. I don't think. Do you think the people who play pro football, knowing what they did with the steroid era and knowing now with the brain thing, their point is, I'm 22 years old, I'm going to make $8 million for 5 years, I got the rest of my life to heal, I hope it's not as bad for me. I'm going for it. Where else am I going to make $5 million or $10 million or $20 million? Nobody thinks it. These guys can't be that stupid to think that they're better off doing that health wise than either playing baseball or you know, like I said, being a financial analyst or something. They're not that dumb. I don't think. That's the trade off.
I'm not sure that everybody approaches it quite that methodically. I think You know, if I have the build and the body for being a football player and I'm good at playing football, yes, I'm going to take that risk. But and it's because I'm invincible, the same way that any 18 or 19-year-old is more invincible than somebody who's 69 or 70. It's not going to happen to me if I'm 18 or 19 or 20.
There's no way even those people. I'm not saying there aren't. I mean, whenever they go with the routine about we have to help people because they're stupid. I've heard so much of that lately. Well, I'm really tired of that, Brendan. You know, people are stupid. You have to tell them what to do. That's not America.
No, not saying that. I'm not saying that they're stupid. I'm just saying that they're not focusing on the same questions or the same answers the way that you and I are looking at it.
I will bet you that if you, I don't know, it's a shameless plug, I guess, the tight end from the Notre Dame that went to the Bears, I will bet you that if you sat him down and gave him a 20-question test regarding how many years you played in the NFL versus life expectancy versus health later in life, whether you're more likely to get if you played 15 years tight end, what are your chances of getting an artificial hip versus somebody else's? I bet you the kid knows exactly what the odds are, or pretty damn close.
Okay.
But he doesn't. He's going to do it anyway. He's going to say, "I'm in here 5 years or six or whatever, and hopefully I don't get hurt. Or if I do get hurt once, I'm out of here. Three concussions and I'm done. Whatever. Maybe he's got a plan. You know, maybe." Mm-hmm. No, he's David Ross.
Yeah, but I also think it's the human condition that there's a high preponderance of folks who say, yeah, the odds are greater that if I play 10 years in the NFL as a tight end, I am 60% more likely than Chief to get a replaced hip by the time by the time I'm 40 instead of the time I'm 70. But I'm willing to take that risk because it's only a 60% higher risk than if I didn't do anything or if I was a trader or something else. So that's quantifiable risk. I agree with that.
Well, I mean, just out of even the sports era, one of my, she's a, get a load of this. Her dad was the starting left tackle on the national championship team when I was in college. So, younger than me. Her husband is a high wire guy for the electric company. And get a load of this, Brendan. I mean, not that everybody knows this. You can't just sign up for that. You have to go to like a, I'm going to say a 4 or 6 week or whatever it is training for it. And he said amazing amount of people fall out. They go up, they can go up there once or twice, but going up there every single day, all day, is just drives them nuts and they quit. He goes, maybe out of 50 guys start, you end up with like 15 or 20 that make it through. I would never have guessed that. I thought once you decided that's what you wanted to do, that event, you know, most guys would hang in there, but maybe not. It's like, you know, it's almost like going, you know, through like a Green Beret thing or something. How many guys fall out? And But I mean, do you think that he has any thought that the amount of money extra he makes, especially when he goes out and works on hurricane duty and gets triple time and has a nice living for his family, better than most? You think this guy's dumb enough to think that if he's putting in dimmer switches for old ladies that this is less? I think he knows he's less safe. I'm sure he's as careful as he can be.
But I think that there are people who seek out that kind of risk, who seek out that adrenaline rush. But you know, let's get back to the football question for a minute. That kind of is a nice segue to the passing of Don Shula yesterday. A guy who played in the NFL for many years and, you know, had very little ill effects relative to some of his peers and had a long life, 90 years old. As far as I know, he did not have dementia or any significant mental illnesses in the later part of his life, which is unusual.
This is a lot of this one out there, Brendan, but you see almost less of that, the dementia piece. You see all kinds of other stuff. You see less of the dementia piece, it seems to me, again, this is not scientific, in the people who played early than people who played
later.
I
agree, because the equipment wasn't as protective as it is later on, so they didn't hit as violently.
Well, you also didn't have our artificial surface, which ups the speed 5 to 10%, right? Or
fewer leaves. Games.
Well, some games you played in the mud, you almost couldn't go fast enough to hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think...
But also fewer games every year.
Right, but you also got tired together. You know, you didn't have this constant substitution where... Or somebody is playing against somebody fresh in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like Butkus would say in his book, we all got tired together. Mm-hmm. They replayed the whole game.
Yeah, that's true.
And
you had guys going both ways, both offense and defense, back in those days when Shula played, so they were on the field the whole time.
Well, the most dangerous thing is some guy to pile off the bench totally fresh in the third quarter on, like, a kickoff or something. Like, it wails into somebody. You know, on an artificial surface type of thing. I mean, that guy is going to hit harder than anybody else does in any other part of the game.
Yep, you're right.
I mean, so, Brendan, what in the economy? We'll talk to you about this. I mean, we are somehow. I get this, and I sure as hell hope I'm wrong. I get this odd feeling that all the stuff we've talked about for however many years you've been on the show and so forth, every economic seemingly screw up is now exemplified by this thing, and it's all okay as long as one guy keeps the printing press going. I mean, the whole idea of, non-sustainable pensions getting paid by less and less people working in a state, now are we getting paid by people who aren't working? I mean, let me get this straight. We're going to pay people month after month by people who aren't working. And the same state is going to turn around and pay the people who aren't working, so they can turn around and pay taxes to pay the people who again aren't working. And if we run out of money, if we're out of money, we're going to go to Washington. It's broke, and they're going to loan us money because they turned on the printing press. What are we doing, Brendan? God, if this somebody better save our ass and come up with a cure or something. Because that's all people. If they don't have a cure or a vaccine, you're not going to get public employees back to work. You're just not going to. They want to stay home and get paid. I'm sorry, they do. And
I'm not sure it's just public employees. Well, there's going to be a lot of employees for a lot of different industries that are going to do that.
Well, but the other industries, the amount of people, when was it? What's his name? Jay kicked us another month. Was it week go Friday or week go Thursday? I think so. I knew more people got laid off that day than the whole month before.
Mm-hmm.
Where firms just said, I carried you for a month. I can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't know when I'm opening. So, I mean, I honestly think that if I could classify our leaders that we've all elected at every level, I can't, maybe there's a couple of them that you see that seem to have their head screwed on straight. The guy from Indiana, I think, does. He actually came out with a plan, Brendan, to open a
I know, I've seen that.
Yeah, how scary is that?
He's on the news a lot. When we're over in Michigan, he's on the news a lot in the local news talking about the plan. He does seem to have a plan more than other governors do.
But this whole idea that we can, until the last life is saved, it could be September, somehow we're going to hold this together because Powell's going to keep throwing money at us. Brendan, these people, they actually believe that. Are they out of their mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that there's going to be a vaccine, despite what I heard yesterday, there's going to be a vaccine by January. I just don't see it. I mean, I don't understand. First, on the economic side, I think that you're right, that people are not going to go back to work or want to go back to work or feel safe going back to work until there's a vaccine. There has to be a reduction of the risk-taking before we completely run out of money. Otherwise, we're going to be like the Weimar Republic.
We already are, I think.
Well, we're not quite there yet, but...
Well, look at the stock market. The stock market's going up. And everybody thinks that means we're okay. The stock market went up every day in the Weimar Republic, too.
Until it didn't.
Well, until the place folded.
Yeah.
Was it a direct feed from the Weimar into Hitler, or was there somebody in the middle? There was somebody in the middle, wasn't there?
No. It was the Weimar Republic collapsed at the time that Hitler was coming into power.
Okay. But, I mean,
that was also, remember, the time of the Great Depression. The stock market hit in 29. The Weimar Republic was through the 20s. And then Hitler started coming into power, I think it was around 1932, something
32,
like
yeah. Well, I think I have, I don't have a message for me. I'm going to have to continue to go to work before there's no chance I get this bug. And I think a lot of people think that that's not the case, Brendan. They better wake up, because you're not going to get paid in your home until there's zero chance of you getting this thing.
Right. No, we know that.
Well, I don't. Oh, whoa. You know it. I know it. I'm going to say Most people don't know it. I hear it every day.
Well, I think that they're delusional if that's the case, because this is going to be around for quite some time. It's a question of, you know, is something like remdesivir going to be able to handle the severity of it and reduce the severity of it so that we can actually live a healthy lifestyle? And, you know, it could also be that this changes a lifestyle pattern for folks as well, for the so-called comorbidities of underlying conditions that people are taking. If they take better care of themselves early on, they'll be less susceptible to dying from the coronavirus.
Skinny people die too.
Now, I know that. I'm not, but again, it's not going to be universal. Young healthy people die from this as well.
I think they're gonna find a way, as we're doing already, that we will find a way to work on the symptoms faster, and we're going to find that less and less people who get it, it's going to be fatal. Mm-hmm. And at some point, your governments are just going to say, if you want to stay home locked up, it's your decision, but everybody else is going to have to take their chances.
Well, you just said something that's really important, that you think it's going to be less lethal, or that you think it's less likely you're going to get it. And that's the key right now. When you're talking about the crisis of confidence of people going back to work or walking down the street, it's, will I get it? And if I get it, how severe will it be? Will I die? If I contract it, will I die from it? Am I willing to take the risk to go through the park for fear of catching COVID and dying? And if not, catching COVID and being out of work for 2 weeks because I'm really, really sick? Or at what level am I willing to take that risk?
I think, Brendan, that from what I'm reading, and it's, you know, obviously I'm on this as much as I can, what I'm reading, the amount of bad outcomes, as they say in New York, is becoming less and less by the day. Every single day, the medical community is finding ways. That's why they're not putting people on ventilators anymore. They kill people on the ventilators. They're learning every single day. I'll bet your chances of dying from this is 1/10 of what it was in Italy, and it's probably 1/100 of what it was in China right now here. Because the hospitals aren't even full.
Well, I don't have any statistics or any information to either support or challenge that assertion. I don't know. But it does seem like, you know, this goes back to the discussion we had a couple weeks ago about testing and availability of testing. If you find out that either through antibodies or through people who are testing positive, that the rate of infection is 10 times or 50 times what we know of, that's a good thing, because you know that instead of a death rate of being 3%, 5%, it's really 0.3% or 0.5%. So the numbers in perspective allow people to be willing to take more of a risk. But the raw numbers, when you look at a million people infected and 65,000-70,000 people dying from this, with projections of a lot more, not knowing what the denominator is, that's a big number.
I think we have some sort of an idea. First of all, the idea of I want these guys, since they've scared the bleep out of everybody, I want one doctor to tell me one person that he knows that walked through a park and somebody walked within 2 feet of him and he was infected by that guy. Just one.
You're never going to be able to find that. Just like you couldn't pinpoint it to a specific person in a meatpacking plant. I don't think it's possible to find out exactly where it came from.
No, but I'm saying when people are working in a plant and there's all kinds of, everybody's using the same bathroom, everybody's using the same kitchen, you're standing next to, I get it how one person there somehow or another from surfaces and everything, I can't identify it, but the idea that if somebody somehow comes within 5 feet of me, the entire science of that is non-existent. It's non-existent, Brennan.
Well, I think when you're talking about people in gatherings, even if they're outdoors, if you and I are standing 2 feet apart, remember the old Seinfeld episode about the close talker?
Yeah.
The guy who got really close in your face and breathed on you when he was talking? That's the situation where somebody could transmit the virus. If you and I are standing 6 inches apart because I'm a close talker, then I could breathe or exhale into you and give you the infection.
Right, but you don't. You have no idea how many. I mean, the idea that one germ that lands on you and you're sick. The reason why I'm going down this road is there's a guy who did the. You've read this, I'm sure, because they talked about joggers. And it had to do with if you're jogging, your breathing is twice as strong as if you're at rest.
Oh yeah, they're talking about a 15-foot radius.
The fine print at the end of the article was the guy's a fluid dynamic person. Mm-hmm. He's just letting you know where one droplet with maybe a germ in it might travel to. Now, if it lands on a duck's back, the duck goes up in the air and lands on your head 4 miles away, it could do that too. But he said to the guy, "Do you have any idea how many germs you need to infect somebody?" Because that was not
a lot.
Because that was not my job. My job was to say, how far could a minuscule droplet go when somebody breathes? I never mm-hmm. said that the one that lands on the guy jogging 30 feet away is going to infect him. That wasn't what they asked me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you have
I know. That's a ridiculous argument to make. Not what you're making, not your point, but the idea that it could. Yeah, one droplet 30 feet away, so therefore you have to stay 30 feet away from everybody instead of 6 feet away. I realize, and that's part of the hysteria that is being generated. However, I do think it makes more sense to reduce the interaction of people as much as possible. Now, well, as much as possible is really what's open for debate. Does opening up a park or opening up offices downtown, people taking public transportation, how risky is that?
Brendan, we only have a few seconds, but I have a question for you. If there's not going to be if the treatment gets better and there's not going to be a vaccine for a while, do you want more people to get it or not? Or do you don't want more people to get it?
You're talking about the herd immunity.
If
60 or 70% of the population gets it so that we really are more immune, what's the cost in lives? In order to get 60% of the population infected, how many people have to
die? Well, what I said was, if it looks like our treatment is getting better and better, and if the hospitals or anybody who gets it that needs it can walk in and get a bed, if we essentially flatten the curve to that level, then what? And again, I don't want to get this thing. I'm more afraid of it than most because I'm older. But mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking about decisions that need to be made somewhere.
I agree. And if you look back historically, the same thing was true at different diseases. You think about even things like polio or measles or smallpox or malaria. And before treatments, before vaccinations came about, those were a much higher death rate than I think what we're experiencing right now.
Oh yeah, polio.
And as treatments came about, the risk was reduced, and in some cases, it was down to zero.
Well, yeah, I don't know about polio. That one was a bad one, Brendan. And I don't think too many people recovered from smallpox, although I guess some did. Brendan, take care, buddy. But if not sooner, see you next week. Enjoy yourself. Hey. S&P Futures up 30. S&P Futures up 105. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, we're back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Jack Silverman on the board. S&P futures up 30. NASDAQ futures up 103. We're trying to bounce back from Friday's debacle. We were down yesterday and came and finished up on the day. So I guess I should have gotten a little longer here today, but I did not. Who knows? We'll see where we end up, but I suspect we'll be up today. We've got individual stocks. Everybody in the Dow is up except Disney's down 3 cents. Disney's earnings are tonight. We'll see where those go. Be interesting to see if Disney gets, if they have bad earnings, if they drop under 100. They almost did the other day. Trade 103 right now. The rest of the world. These guys were down pretty heavy yesterday. DAX is up 134 today. It's 1.2%. They were down like 3% yesterday. FTSE up 74, 1.3%. CAC around up 59, 1.3%. So it's right across the board. Even over there. In Asia, we've got Nikkei, down, 574. They're close there. That was on 5-1. So that would have been Friday. So they're closed, it appears. Shanghai is up 37. They reopened. Oh, wait a minute. They're closed too. These guys are all still closed. The last one, the only one that's open is the Hang Seng, up 254. That's a full 1%. So we'll have to get those guys reopened tomorrow. We'll have to bring all that back to where they were last week and summarize it for everybody. We've got bonds, 0.65 is the number. The Bund minus 0.57. Japan minus 0.01. Oil's the big mover today. It's up 216. Again, we're down. We have the June number up to 2255. But all it's doing is matching up with the rest of the futures. The rest of the futures never went below 20. Or 1950 or something. So be careful with that. Because we keep talking about this, the close contract, but that's maybe not the one you should be looking for. Because you can't buy oil for next week. Brent up $2, natural gas up 9 cents, over $2, which is very interesting considering. RBOB 86 cents, that's as high as we've seen that in a while, so maybe the real cheap gas is going away, the dodo bird here as well. Gold down 850, 1704, silver up 6 cents, 1486, copper up a penny, 232, actually inching up just a hair. So if you're looking for any kind of a recovery in China, this might be a little encouraging for you, but in order you got to get to like $3 for it to be real. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, everyone. We're looking pretty good on the traffic standpoint, or at least right now. We do have one accident to report on the Eisenhower West before St. Charles Road that is causing some congestion, stop-and-go traffic. For weather, currently in Chicago, it is 44 degrees with light showers and a high of 46. Showers should continue throughout most of the day, clear going into the late afternoon. In Phoenix, it's currently 71 and clear with a high of 103. This day in sports, the Cubs scored 12 runs off of Hal Keller in the eighth inning of the 1938 game between the Cubs and the Phillies. This is monumental to note because it is the most, it's the record for the both runs scored and batters faced against one pitcher in a single NL game.
So they didn't bring somebody in from like right field out monitoring?
Nope, he faced 16 batters and gave up 12 runs.
Sounds like some innings in softball that I've had. Jesus. So did he, how many pitches? They didn't know in those days, did they?
No, I don't know if they calculated that. It was a quick game actually. It was only just over 2 hours, so I can't imagine it was too long. I think they just kept hitting him and hitting him and hitting him.
I think that's a massive game time in those days.
Yeah, but for our standards.
No, they used to be like an hour 35 and stuff. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday?
Well, I'm hanging. I'm doing stuff. The market's come back a little bit, so had some people that were, this will help out a lot of my clients, so that's good.
Yeah, you kind of had a sneaky sell-off. You know, you hit that high on Thursday. You had some overnight downside action. Actually, on Wednesday, you had the overnight downside on Thursday, and kind of same thing on Friday. Nice recovery in the market today, so we are up on the week. I think we could just be on cruise control until Friday, Chief, when we get that jobs number.
Yeah, the more I hear, and I don't want to be chicken little here, but the more I hear people comparing this to guys that are 35 years old, other, you know, recessions in their lifetime, I almost want to, what did they say in our day, was it Aquavalva, the cold slap in the face? I almost want to give these guys a cold slap in the face and say, what are you talking about? When have you ever had anything where we had 24% unemployment in your lifetime or even mine? I mean, how do you even begin to say this is like something else you've seen?
I haven't heard anybody say that, but I mean we haven't. I mean, unless the people that you're talking to, I've been around during the Depression. I don't know if they can really make that kind of statement.
Not even Kenny Pulcheri's that old.
No, neither am I. I'm getting up there, but
no, we weren't around for that
one. Not quite that old, but. You know, it's the market's been extremely resilient. Seem to be discounting, you know, the high unemployment numbers. Market's very encouraged by, you know, the lockdowns being released and economies attempting to get back. Oil, I guess everyone must be leaving their house and going out and filling up their tank or using a lot of oil, because I think a lot of the rally this morning is predicated on that the July contract. The June contract is for liquidation only, so that's why it's not really a fair contract. So the focus is on the July here, and it's trading up $1.95. That's the driver behind the continuation rally this morning.
What I know I harp on this, Joel, and I actually don't want to, but it's kind of like
okay.
It's kind of like the bone sticking out of your leg. You sort of have to harp on it until somebody fixes it, right? This whole idea that now we have, in Illinois, we have people that aren't working paying other people who aren't working. And don't worry, we're going to borrow. What did California borrow from the Treasury yesterday? How many billion dollars? They're the first ones in. There's like three or four states that if by the end of the month, their unemployment checks are going to bounce if the federal government doesn't give them money. So there's Texas. So Texas, California, and somebody else have already arranged loans. Loans from what? They don't. How much more can this printing press work? I mean, we're giving the market the money it wants, so it stays up there. We're giving states the money they want. When are we reaching a point where this money's not worth anything, Joe? I think we're getting there. I saw pot roast $7 a pound yesterday. Normally $4.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be some good pot roast.
So, you know, one would hope. I think we're at an amazing crossroads here of what we're doing with this money and where it's going to land us. And I just hope that I'm seeing this all wrong, because I don't think I am. Just saying.
When they start calling in our debt, I mean, I think that's when, you know, you have to worry. I mean, it's kind of tough because, you know, the government is in a position where they've put themselves where they have to do this, right? If not, you know, everything would completely fall apart. So it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's just going to happen until, you know, everyone comes and says, hey, I want my money, and, you know, demand their actual paper and their actual delivery on the debt. And, you know, we don't own all our debt. It's a scary situation. So until that debt is called in, then we're going to just keep the printing presses going.
Well, we have, I haven't researched everywhere. The only place I've somewhat researched is Best You Can. And I don't really want to know the nuts and bolts, to be honest with you. It'll make me feel even worse. It's places like Venezuela, Argentina, and Weimar, Germany. I mean, Munchkin comes out and says, here's the headline. U.S. Treasury seeks to borrow a record $3 trillion this quarter. Okay. Now that, on itself, that's going to be the deficit. That would be the message to the people, right? But Joel, what's wrong with this picture? What's wrong? What's totally out of that statement? I've gotten to the point at this age that people lie to you all the time, but the part that's really starting to frost my ass is people lying by omission.
Okay.
You know, first of all, who's he going to borrow this from? He's not going to. At the end of the day, the Fed is going to come up with 3/4 of that money off the printing press. He's not going to borrow that. He may borrow it for an afternoon through Goldman Sachs and pay those bleeps commission, only to have the Fed call him up at 2:00 the same day and say, "We'll buy it back from you. By the way, we'll pay commission." The Fed is going to increase the balance sheet by what? They just increased it by $2.7 trillion. Now he's going to borrow $3 trillion. Well, the numbers match, don't they?
It's just going to keep going that way, Chief. You're talking about the facts here, and I can't dispute them. And it's just something that we've been talking about on the show for years. And now it's just, you know, it's at a level that we couldn't even imagine. It was, you know, where we were at before, we couldn't believe it, and now it's 10 times beyond that level.
But why can't they just come out, Joel, and say, Treasury printing $3 trillion to send money to states and people? Doesn't sound so good?
Exactly. People don't want to hear the truth. They just want their $1,200 check from the government. They don't care what are the dynamics behind it or the long-term implications. They get their check. Some people are making more money actually not working. So it's, you know, really developing into a situation where we got to get these people back to work, and you know, you got to weigh the economy versus, you know, health. It's just an incredible balance. It's very, very, very hard to manage.
Hey, did you see, you know, a minute and a half or so? Did you see your Michigan president on CNBC yesterday? So the school?
No, I did not. What did he have to say?
Oh God, they're in the hole for, I don't know, $100 million, $200 million. I was looking for the number. I was hoping you saw it, the actual number. And you know what's funny? Well, it's not funny because I was actually on a conference call with some new clients last Wednesday night, most of whom are doctors, and one of them was in a hospital in Virginia, and I would never have guessed this, Joel. He said the hospital loses $90 million a month because they don't do any, because of no elective procedures.
You know, the universities, the hospitals, I mean, you know, the revenue that, I mean, I've been thinking about this for a long time, you know, not filling up the big house. I mean, you know, higher education. I mean, they're not even, you know, talking about, wait till the government has to start bailing out universities. I mean, it's, well, he very encompassing thing.
He had his hand out yesterday saying, but he said, they asked the question, these guys are smarter than I am, they asked the question, was most of those losses in the hospitals? He said, yes, they were. I mean, we gotta get, what do we, you know, it's almost like if you got something else wrong with you, you can't even get it fixed now. I think we need to fix it.
That's correct. That's correct.
All right, Joel, talk to you next week, buddy. Take care of yourself. All right. Go blue.
All right, go blue.
SP Futures up 30, NASDAQ Futures up 104. Mr. Kenny Polcari in a minute.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Jack Silver on the board. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 110. Mr. Kenny Polcari. Kenny, were you the guy who bought the 25,000 calls in Microsoft yesterday?
Yeah. How do you know? How do you find all these things out about me before I make them public?
Whenever I see something huge, I think of Warren Buffett, Soros, Kenny.
All right. I'm in that I'm in that same list. I love you. That's great.
You're one of the.
What's
going
on?
You're the man behind the man behind the man.
Yeah.
Not, well, you tell me. We now have. We went from not a whole lot of people working, paying people that aren't working in Illinois and the pension thing to people that aren't working that are paying people that aren't working.
Right. And, you know, and what's interesting, I don't see any end in sight of it, right? They're talking about some of these states, or who was it? McConnell, who talked about some of these states letting them go bankrupt, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me at all, and certainly suffered a lot of backlash on that, so that's kind of on the, you know, what's happening on the political side. But, you know, what's interesting about the markets is yesterday morning we came into, after the weekend, what appeared to be a weak market. Certainly, a lot of Asia's closed down for the holiday for a couple of days, but Hong Kong was off. The European markets were all off better than 3% as we came in, and I thought it was going to be another disastrous day yesterday with our markets being down 2 or 2.5%, kind of lock in step with what the Europeans are doing. But what's interesting is we opened weaker, but immediately found a floor. NASDAQ rallied right away. Tech started to take the lead, as it has done during the whole decade-long recovery from the great financial crisis, as well as taking the lead either on the way down or the way up in this latest coronavirus crisis. And so NASDAQ went positive very early on. The Dow and the S&Ps remained kind of negative all day till about 2:30 or so, when they managed to go flat and then go positive in the last half an hour, 45 minutes of the day. And I found that very curious, because nothing had really changed. There was no news story. The virus is still obviously a concern. Warren Buffett has still sold his airlines, and he's talking about, you know, he's got nothing to do with $137 billion, so he's going to leave it in the bank. And, you know, don't bet against America. But I don't see any opportunity here at the moment, causing people on both sides of the aisle to have a debate about it. Because, listen, I understand it. I understand him. He's had a stellar career. He's certainly made plenty of money, that's for sure. But I think you have to be sort of suspect at the moment. He is 90 years old. His time horizon is very different than yours and mine, I think. I'm not sure it's necessarily as negative as maybe he, as the market kind of assumed he meant it to be. I'm not even sure he meant it to be negative, but I think initially it was. It was certainly the talk all day long yesterday on CNBC, every single show talking about Warren, and quizzing every guest they had on what does it really say about investing in America and the state of the economy, which I think is interesting, because as much as I, you know, I like to listen to him, I think he's a brilliant man, I'm not necessarily sure that at the moment I'm really in the same camp with him.
A lot of people aren't, Kenny, but and I sure don't want to be you know, sort of chicken a little, but I almost feel like all the stuff I've studied my entire life, from Milton Friedman on, this is like the, what they say in Major League, this is the out you've been waiting your whole life for. This, Kenny, to me, this is so insane. I mean, I think a lot of the people on CNBC that are, they're looking at the market, they're looking at life in the market through the lens that you've always had. And I don't see how this lens here even counts. To me, honestly, I started out as a joke 6 months ago. This is the Weimar Republic lens. Whatever needs money, the Fed prints it and gives it to them. Now, the states, over the weekend, I hear four states, they got like 2 weeks before they bounce their unemployment checks. It was California, Texas, and it's in New Jersey. Somebody else. Might not have been New Jersey. Might have been, I don't know, somewhere. And Illinois is like right behind them, and maybe Illinois is one of the three. And so what the first thing I hear yesterday during the middle of the day is the Fed has now got loan guarantees to California, Texas, and somebody else are sending them.
Yeah, I'm sure they – listen, I'm sure they are. What are they going to do? They're going to let the states go bankrupt? They're going to let the states not
– But my point, Kenny, I'm not saying they should. I'm saying – but they don't have any money. They're just printing it.
I agree. They're just printing it. And they're going to have less money because – tax receipts are going to go plummet, right? Because nobody's working, and so there's going to even have less money.
Well, yesterday I saw a pot roast for $7.99. We're going to we could have some of the most massive inflation. Who the hell's going to? Who's going to pay this? I mean, can you ever win anything with your wife or girlfriend? It's like, she was talking about wanting to do this in her house and that in her house, and she. has impeccable taste, and, you know, she's a stager in real estate and everything, and, you know, she's the best. I go, don't you get it that your taxes are going to be double next year? Or,
yeah.
You know, what do you mean?
All the taxes.
Yeah, all the taxes.
You know, real estate, everything's going to be double.
Like what do you mean? Really, you know, what do you mean, what do I mean? Open your eyes. Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where it's going to land, Kenny, but I just know it's not going to land well.
No, but I will say, you know, I'm up in Cape Cod at the moment.
Good for you.
That's a whole other story. We can talk about it. But, you know, I went food shopping the other day down here in the Cape at a Star Market, which is a big chain supermarket. I got to tell you, I looked around when the bill was done. I had four bags and it was $320. I thought to myself, what the hell did I buy for $320? It's only four bags of groceries, right? It wasn't even all steak and chicken and beef and meats. It was a little bit of everything, right? It was some cereal. It was vegetables. It was that. But it was $310. I was scratching my head going, oh, boy.
Well, we've got supply chain problems.
It's going to get ugly.
Well, that's the weird part, Kenny, is I see this. I remember the book because I read most of it, Milton Friedman and Claire Friedland. We're going to have people that's saying it's a supply chain problem. It's this. It's an oil problem. It's this kind of problem. The fact is, and out of all the things I say, there's only a few things you probably pay attention to. The quote is, inflation is everywhere and every time a monetary phenomenon. Or is it always and everywhere? Something like that. It's not going to be because the pork producers close. It's not going to be. It's because there's too much money in the system. And I don't see how we get around that right now. But, I mean, we're talking, I mean, Munchkin says $3 trillion he's going to borrow. Kenny, he's not going to borrow squat. He's going to borrow $300 million, and the rest of it's going to come from the Fed's printing press.
Yeah, exactly right. And he's going to borrow $3 trillion. Actually, he corrected it. It was, did you see that? It wasn't $3 trillion. It was $2.99.
All right.
How much he's borrowing. And that's in this quarter, and estimates are already running at almost $680 billion for the third quarter, and, you know, we're not even halfway through the second quarter yet, so I'm sure that number's going to change
But he's not borrowing from anybody. He's borrowing from the Fed.
No, correct. They're just printing it. No, there's no doubt. He's not borrowing it. You know, that's how they sell it, right? They're going to borrow the money. They're not. They're printing the money.
Okay, we got to let you go, but I will say one thing. What you just said, it's that obvious. I'm going to say that out of 330 million people in this country, maybe a million know it's obvious.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, I'll talk to you next week, huh?
I wonder where you are, Cape Cod, West Dennis, Barnstable House, those kind of places?
No, I'm actually in Buzzards Bay, right by the Cape Cod, right by one end of the Cape Cod Canal. It's a spectacular day outside.
Hey, good for you. It's raining here, so have a nice time. SP Futures up 30, NASDAQ Futures up 109. Be right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. We also have Mr. Jeff Joseph on the line. SP Futures up.
Hey, good morning.
How are you? Did you hear your man's latest, just when you think you've heard it all, Jeff, your man just came out with a quote that will go down somewhere in economic lore. Tariffs are by far the greatest negotiating item ever invented.
All right, who's my man?
Mr. Trump.
I didn't see that one.
Just came out. I look at that and I go, just when you think. You'll never see anything worse. It's like, where do we find these people? I just never mind. Oh, God.
Good morning to you, too.
Good morning to you, too. Hey, I got a question for you. I know you guys did that thing on China, and the whole story about the fiasco with having to pull them off the shelves and stuff, but did you guys get any of your info from this outfit called the Epoch Times?
No, you know, that's an intriguing publication. I can't say I know too much about it. I can't say I know much about it at all, but I'm aware of their content. So what's the question?
I
don't know who owns them. And
well, I'll tell you. I got this thing. It's stuffed in my mailbox, right? And now they talk about they have this circulation. I sure as hell didn't buy it. It's in my mailbox. Yep. It's a multi-language newspaper and media extension of the Falun Gong New Religious Movement.
Oh, no kidding.
The newspaper is part of the Epoch Media Group, which also operates New Tang Dynasty Television. For its article, the publication draws from network within China, as well as staff living in the West. And the founder is some guy named John Tang. Publisher is Epoch Media Group, blah, blah, blah. First issue date, 2000, so it's not new. Founded 19 years ago, so I started reading the thing. I don't know what it was. It seemed like, you know, it's pretty right wing, but that, you know, it's okay. I'll read. It was on China like white on rice, and some of the stuff that you came up with and other people went on the show. That's why I asked if you. They were all over the how many real deaths were over there and all kinds of stuff. I mean, basically. You know, nailing doors shut, and you know, you came out either healthy or bodies, and the amount of the crematoriums working overtime and how many cell phone numbers have disappeared and how they lied to the rest of the world and blah, blah, blah. And But they also
We heard those things directly from Chinese nationals who did business in the U.S., who spoke to us on the basis of anonymity because, of course, they had family and friends, often parents, alive and living back in China. And in where we got lucky was knowing a family specifically that lived in Wuhan that was able to give us firsthand experiences of what they saw through their windows, which, of course, was a complete lockdown, a police state, people being locked in their apartments and body bags everywhere, as they described. But, yeah, the Epoch Times is interesting. I saw that about that combination of the astronauts' orange juice and the Wu-Tang Clan, right? And I never could quite put that together. Who exactly was the source of that? But now I understand. So it's a Falun that religious group, the Falun side.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I'll dig the thing up. I'm
Falun Gong, right? Yeah. Falun Gong.
And because this is the weird part is they had a big, it was an editorial piece or whatever. Basically, what is America thinking of? If you ask anybody, we're going to say that our big enemy is Russia. And they rattle off a list with Tiananmen Square being like the easiest. This year they knocked off 20 million people. I remembered all this stuff, Jeff, but it's foggy. Sure. I mean, you since you just did this, you have a much better recall of this than me. That's why I couldn't wait to talk to you today. But went through this whole list of stuff, and now just out of the blue, our man David, who sometimes can read my mind, which is scary, the amount of accommodation we give this place. He says there's 500,000 Chinese students in the U.S. in a given year. I know I had one of my acquaintances here who was cutting deals. Are you probably more familiar than me that if you come over from China, just at the time that our president doesn't want any immigrants, right? If you come over from China with enough money to finance a building to where there's 30 people working there or whatever it is, that they get, what is it? Is it three or four citizenships or five for the family and one for some? It's some, you get citizenships for investing money here.
Capital investment.
Yeah, it's
yeah, it's an extension of the H1, the H1N1 program that allows for capital investment to correlate with citizenship. There's some stipulations and contingency, but yeah, it's a.
Is that
all
EB5?
Under that program?
Is that the EB5?
Which
visa?
Is indeed a subject of the administration. It has some. It is something that they brought up before. The other big threat that we've been able to quantify is that because of the social scoring systems that exist back in mainland China, with the CCP, keeping track of people and scoring every resident of mainland China, that the result of that scoring and the transparency and visibility associated with that and the social shaming that goes in that scoring, it's not only social sharing, but it's also part of their policing activity, is that the ability to assign a score to anybody, which then determines their somewhat economic and social fate, carries over to the United States. So if you're a Chinese family and you have a son studying at Princeton, which is not by any means uncommon, and then he ends up taking a job with Google upon graduation, that they can still exert so much leverage on that child or let's say young adult in America to do certain things, maybe industrial espionage or corporate secrets, that they can hold the parents hostage of their social score. And this isn't just pontificating and anecdotal evidence, but there's real evidence that occurs on a regular basis. And of course, that conversation culminated recently with the discovery that a Harvard payrolled tenured professor had received well over $750,000 in payments directly from the Chinese Communist Party to basically spy on America while being a Harvard faculty member. So there's a lot there, and yeah, China is not just something that a burdened president is bringing up to deflect criticism of his response handling during a national pandemic. China's a real threat, a real problem, and one that many politicians just don't want to touch because of economic or political reasons. There are many, you know, the Chinese influence is very large, and it has its hands very deep in both parties. And I think, despite all the obvious wind that Joe Biden doesn't have within himself, but certainly at his back, being the antidote to Trump, that his biggest Achilles heel is going to be China in the general elections.
Why do you constantly anticipate my next question? Just saying. Because you do. Because I'm going to ask you, because you're also one of your other incredible magazines was, had to do with fake news.
Mm.
Now, this morning, David, who lives sometime in fake news, I love him, but it says, U.S. legal immigration law greatly benefits China. Visa programs such as the EB-5 visa for wealthy foreign investors, which is, I think, what you were talking about. Then there's the F-1 student visa, the J-1 visas, whatever those things are. Well, 180,000 Chinese nationals enter the country every year, in addition to the 60,000 to 70,000 who secure green cards. I've always wondered, Jeff, from a country that, you know, listening to you and other people, you more than anybody, they keep tabs on everybody. So the idea that they're just going to allow, you know, 100,000 people that have made $2 million or something over there just leave and become residents of Canada and the U.S. with not a string attached. I always, maybe it's just my Southside upbringing, says, that doesn't sound right. I mean, it, all of a sudden now you've made the dough and it's free. You're free to leave and take your dough with you without any kind of string. But I guess my question is, what is the, also, but this is out of Breitbart, okay? Now, 2 weeks ago, I read somewhere else that says that the Trump campaign people have figured out, or think they've figured out, that one of Joe Biden's Achilles heel, which you, of course, brought up before I could tell my story, like, because you're brighter than me, yeah. that's the Achilles heel, and now they're going to hammer China because they think that's their, now, my question is, how much of what Breitbart, and to be perfectly blunt, David Wright here, can I believe, because I know they're trying to push Trump with this, yet I'm thinking a lot of this is probably true. I don't know how much. That's my question to you. How do I know, how do I haircut this? I guess is my question. From them wanting me to think that they're going to all of a sudden do something, even though he's been there 3 years, and I don't know what he's done to these guys. But, you know, I don't know how much of it was Bush. I don't know how much was other Republicans. I mean, it seems to me that they're trying to ascribe a Democratic, Republican thing to this. The fact is, Pepsi wanted to sell chicken over there and Pepsi, and so did Coke. And they got essentially a lot of influence here, and the people saw a lot of stuff over there.
Yeah, you know, the blame game, when you have to go back so far in history, I don't see that as being particularly productive. If you want to be really technical about it, then it starts with Nixon, right? And in easing relationships with China. But really, Bill Clinton, you know, would be the, when most favored nation status was assigned and the overall easing of trade began aggressively. But I'm not sure that's productive. That appeared to be a kind of the right thing at the right time, kind of a breakthrough coming out of
well, if you ask a soybean, you know, farmer, it's the best thing ever happened.
Cold War with China, but what's happened since, which has been meticulously chronicled in a book by Brigadier General John Spaulding, U.S. Air Force retired general, called Stealth War. It's a great book that people should pull up online and you know, or buy, where he covers on every single front where China has really taken advantage of that, in every possible front, whether it be rare metals or shipping or intellectual property knockoffs and geopolitical ambitions and the acquisition of balance sheets and building infrastructure into neighboring countries to exert more political influence, and then their lobbying effect on K Street in Washington, which is really well documented. Their deep ties with politicians, and then allowing basically allowing, you know, the Chinese elected Trump, if you want to put it that way, because the decimation of American manufacturing and the subsequent dissatisfaction with American politics that the working class has felt, that ultimately led to Trump's election, was a direct result of the outsourcing of all these jobs to China, it's the obsession that the media and predominantly the Democratic left has with Russia just for political purposes seems just to be so naive when you make the comparison as to who a real threat is. Because Russia's a declining economy, China's a growing one. Russia's a narrow economy, China's a diverse one. And one is actively engaging, you know, confronting America in economic, social, political censorship in every possible way. And, you know, not to mention the ongoing violation of over 2 million Uyghur Muslims' civil rights. There's just so many ways that China is abusing American interests and individual rights and influencing NATO, and they are indeed the threat that we should be most focused on. But for political reasons, Democrats kind of shy away from that.
Well, it's all Republicans.
And I think it's going to cost them in November.
I mean, so
or it's going to be an issue, let's say that.
I agree, but I mean,
it's hard to foresee anything that's going to materially cost the Democrats in November as Trump continues to be Trump, but this will certainly be an issue.
Yeah, but it's hard to even imagine that a Republican president is going to tell the soybean farmers, screw you, we're not selling them anything more, or telling Coke, screw you, we're not selling them anything more. I mean, that's not happening. I mean, nobody has the stones to do that.
No, it's tough. And then, you know, Mark Cuban came out yesterday because, of course, he still has political ambition. And by the way, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's not too late. I'd say there's a good 10% probability. And you know that that's something we spend time on, particularly with the prediction markets over at predictit.org, where you can bet real money and on political and economic outcomes. I would still assign a reasonable probability that Cuban, you know, could launch a late third-party candidacy. But he just said yesterday that we should eliminate all tariffs at this point with China. So, you know, there isn't anyone, you know, even those on the Democratic side know that, want to be honest, that taking on China was a good thing to do. Of course, the manner of the tariffs and how to do it and, you know, with how much force can always be debated. But now, during this period, you have, you know, people like Cuban saying, "Hey, let's give up that battle because we have a economic catastrophe to deal with right now."
Well, that one
so
out
it's,
there,
it's hard to say when we're ever going to get.
I mean, it's,
you know,
two
the,
things, though.
The courage to take them on in the manner that we have to.
Or I'm not going to debate Mr. Cuban all I could on just about everything, I think, honestly, but just saying.
I think we're going to see him. You know, there's also a reasonable chance, much better chance that Jesse Ventura, of all people, we're pretty certain that he's going to launch his candidacy as a Green Party candidate. He just joined the Green Party a couple of days ago and made that official. So the inside line on that has now moved over to 60% probability. At least those are the betting odds that Ventura, of all people, is going to launch a candidacy as a Green Party candidate. Justin Amash is all but announced a Libertarian candidacy for president. So the the show will continue.
Well, let me couple things, Jeff. I would much rather go on national TV and debate Mark Cuban on any subject than I would you. I don't think the man has anywhere near the depth of knowledge and the stuff he likes to talk about that he thinks he has. You, I would have trouble with. Him, no. I honestly believe that. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't like the guy. I mean, I just say these people think they know enough, and they don't. But here's another thing that I spent a very rainy, cold Saturday one day, and I was wondering, this is actually for the last election, and I was wondering
since now both parties, of course this year is all screwed up at the convention, but both parties really don't want, shall we say, the Bobby Kennedy phenomenon, that the primaries were stretched out enough to where if it looks like the people winning the first two aren't captivating anybody, that you could swoop in like Bobby Kennedy and win the last three or four and develop some momentum and walk into a brokered convention and essentially walk out with the nomination, which I'm sure he would have done. I mean, that has been told. Now that both parties, I don't know if it's money or whatever it is, they want the internal party people, the poobahs within the party, whether you're the right-wing knucklehead or the left-wing knucklehead, the money you come up with and the candidate you select, I mean, sort of like the George Bush phenomenon, they want that person to win the first two or three candidates and everybody else to drop, or two or three primaries, and everybody else to drop out. So I actually went through what it would take to get on the ballots in every state. Now, Jesse, who I think is smarter than Mark Cuban in a lot of ways, realizes he has to join an already party if he's going to do that because they already have some groundswell. See, I'm sure you're probably the only people who might know this. The last election, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, is it the Libertarian Party? It's the first time ever that a third party, even Teddy Roosevelt, nobody was able to get on the ballot in every state. They were the first people to do that. Ross Perot couldn't do that. If you go state by state, and I went through like four states and I had like 4 hours and I spent like an hour per state going through their election laws. To be honest, Jeff, I could go through an organic chem book with more success than I could that. And I don't know anything about organic chem. It is, I don't know how many legal places you would have to hire to get on these ballots. It is absolutely rigged against anybody. The Democrat, Republican, they get a buy on there. You start getting the signatures and all that stuff and the dates. Some of those signature dates are like in July. And in some states, to be written in, you have to register, or else they won't even take a write-in. I mean, the chances of Mark Cuban deciding in like July, I'm going to do this, it's like a fart in a hurricane, to be honest with you. He has no chance.
It's certainly true. The Libertarians were on all 50 states in 2016.
First
nationally, that was achieved once before, about 20 years earlier, with Harry Brown as a candidate.
Really?
So it was the second time that ever happened. But it's indeed rare. You know, it's a rare thing because of the election laws, and of course what was it? Gary Weld Johnson, I think, was the ticket for 2016, and they actually, you know, they received, I think, was, well, memory's failing me. It's either 2.7 or 4%. Of the vote. I think it was 2.7% of the vote nationally. And of course the benchmark for Libertarians and all third parties is 5%. If they can achieve 5% of the popular vote, they'll receive federal funding and be recognized as a bona fide political party in forward elections. And that really, I think, you know, whether you voted for Nader or Perot or Johnson Well, that it's very often not the candidate you're voting for, but it's an ideal, it's a principle that you're voting for, that there should be a third party, and that's what seems to drive.
They've never made 5%, I don't believe. Russ Perot's the only guy who made 5%? And he didn't really have a party.
You know, I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know if he did.
But
he got my vote.
Well, you know, the weird part,
I thought he was an absolute nut.
Oh, yeah.
Although I voted for Nader, too, for the same reason. I thought he was a nut.
Well, you know, Russ Perot had already, I had a client who decided he didn't like the U.S. anymore. The guy had been he didn't like Clinton. The guy was a bombardier, or a navigator in a B-25, World War II. It was a prisoner of war. And he decides he doesn't want to be a citizen of America. All right, so off he goes. Talk about losing a nice client. He had three islands he owned up in the Bay of the Islands in Canada. God, it was gorgeous. But he ends up being a citizen of the Isle of Man with residency in Bermuda. This all takes like a year and all kinds of money to do this. And guess who his three neighbors were in Bermuda had already made their escape? Russ Perot and his two kids.
Oh, my Lord.
They'd already had their, you know, they had their escape package and they were on Bermuda. Do you happen to read the results of like the last election by state president?
I have, yeah. It's part of something you have to do since we're active investors in the prediction markets, you know, on predictit.org. And there's a market for every state, you know, as to what the state count will be in 2020. So we're frequently referencing the vote count in 2016.
Well, what I'm saying
is, by the way, I just pulled up, you're right, Ross Perot had 8.4% of the vote, which was an enormous amount of.
Yeah, yeah, but the only one who got more is probably Teddy Roosevelt, I would guess.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is if you're looking at these for another reason. What I was saying is if you look at, like, the Michigan vote totals, and I think Colorado, you look at Illinois, you're going to get Trump, you're going to get Hillary Clinton, and you might get the third party, you might get a Green Party. There's 3-4 people there. In some states, there's 2, maybe 3. Well, everybody had 3 because they were on the ballot. So you go to Michigan or Colorado, there might be 20 people there. If you ran and I voted for you, it'll be like, I won't say 2, but if you got like 200 votes, you're there. Other states don't even bother with that. So in Michigan, if you actually did run, even a write-in campaign and got 200 votes, you'd be listed. Other states don't even list you. Screw you. There's no write-in for you. Screw you.
Yeah. In Michigan 2016, Gary Johnson got 3.6% of the vote, and Jill Stein got 1.1% of the vote. But there were others, like who, I don't even know, who is Daryl Castle?
I don't know. When I read it, I said, who is Daryl?
Or Media Sultzik, who got 2,209 votes, 0%, you know. But he was on part of the Natural Law Party. So, yeah, there's obscure candidates that ended up on the rosters there.
I think Colorado got down to like 30 votes and 40, or one state did, that I was looking at. It was bizarre. But other states, if you're not Democrat, they don't want you. Did you, I'll ask you after the, and we come back from break, but I don't think it was ever published. Anyway, we'll go through this. SP Futures up 37 now, putting a whip to it. NASDAQ Futures up 122. Somebody bought a boatload of these Microsoft 180 calls yesterday. Hey, the stock's 181.38. That's not a bad buy. What do you think, Jeff? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Jeff Joseph with us, as we do every Tuesday. We also have Mr. Jack Silverman back by popular demand, back from no school, I guess, so he's here. S&P futures up 36.50, NASDAQ futures up 119, so we're off to the races here this morning. Dow up 317. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 202 now, that's almost 2%. They were down 3 yesterday. FTSE up 102, 1.8%. CAC around up 91, 2.1%. So we're bullish pretty much all around the place. Nikkei closed. They last traded on 5-1, so that would have been Friday. Shanghai last traded last month of April 30th. That was last Thursday. Hang Seng, however, is open. Up 254. That's 1%. Bonds, well, the 10-year rate, 0.65. I think that's 6.6, 0.659. That's up 0.02%. The Bund, minus 0.57. Japan, minus 0.01. So still hovering right around the zero number. Oil, up 235. This is the June contract. It's up 11%, 22.74. Brent up $2. It's, 29.24. Natural gas, is over 209. I don't know quite know why natural gas is running up here, cause we're not anywhere near winter, but, anyway, it's running up. RBOB, up 4 cents, 86 cents. So let's say $1.60 gasoline might be in your rear view mirror. Gold down 750, 1705. Silver up a dime, 1490. Copper, 231. So, dropping up out of its lethargy a little bit. It almost ducked under $2. So it's at least moving a little bit. What do you got for us, Jack? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning once again. We're looking pretty good on the traffic standpoint. No major traffic to report. And we don't even have any accidents as of right now, but we do have some flooding down south in Orland Park. The Southwest Highway Route 7 between West 143rd Street and 135th Street is currently closed due to flooding. For the weather, we're looking okay in Chicago right now, 45 degrees with some light showers, looking to get a little bit warmer and a little bit nicer as the day goes on. In Phoenix, it is currently 68 degrees and clear with a high of 103. This day in sports, the Cincinnati Reds lost to the Montreal Expos 4-3 in 1978, but the reason why this is important is Pete Rose went 2-for-4, including his 3,000th hit out of his 4,256. Chief.
Have you been watching some of these old games, Jeff? It's been keeping me going at night. Last night I watched
Watched some of the old hockey games. That's what I've been watching, some vintage hockey.
Did you see last week I watched the part of it because I've been watching the Bulls. Was game four of the Indiana Pacers. And I can't believe the difference in basketball between then and now. The amount of contact, the amount, you go inside, they hammer you. And every single time somebody misses an assignment, the announcers who missed the assignment, now we don't know, nobody cares who the assignment was. The guy just drives in for a lap. So, but hockey, I watched, it's 74, the first time Philadelphia, first any of the new teams won. They had Phil Esposito, Ken.
Oh, Hatch, sure, yeah.
And Bobby Orr was on the Bruins. Wow, nobody wore a helmet.
That's also a different game, too. Huh? I mean, you watch the speed of the skating. I mean, it was still very exciting, and unfortunately for maybe some different reasons that some of the hockey purists don't appreciate, because, of course, you know, in the early days before the third man rule, which kind of changed the game for a lot of spectators, because that meant that the third man entering a fight was permanently ejected with a game misconduct. But of course, it was a wild, reckless time back then, you know, before the third man rule. But boy, you look at the difference now in terms of the speed of the skating and the skating. It's just, it's night and day. The skill on ice now and the speed of the skating is so, so different than looking back in the, you know,
well, I think the equipment's
late
60s,
early 70s.
The equipment's better. The rinks are bigger. All those rinks, except for a couple of them, were never standard size. They were always small.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the skates are better. A lot of stuff's better. I mean,
sure. Yeah.
Anyway, the oil part here, we are up to $22 again, but if you go to December, it's still 30. So we're up during the whole mess. But the main thing that's happened is the contango is we still are in contango, but nowhere near as bad as we were a couple of days ago. You know, Jeff, the thing you've talked about in the China situation, you know, I don't think we can actually spend too much time on this because it's almost like you and I own a bar. The guy comes in and, you know, he's a ninth degree black belt and a heavyweight champion, and neither one of us really think we can take his ass, but we also know he has a bunch of other weaknesses, and we kind of work on those. It's like the Chinese realize nobody's going to kick our ass militarily, but they're using every other weakness we have against us. What did Lenin say? A capitalist will always sell you the rope with which you can hang him, or something like that.
Yep.
I mean, well, I don't really know.
And the Chinese said it themselves. You know, the art of war, which is not just something that some people put on their desk to look cool and, you know, educated, but the art of war is still a Bible for conflict for the Chinese, and the Communist Party still uses it as a reference. And I'm, again, not anecdotally, but something documented in General Spaulding's book. And there's that's Sun Tzu's, you know, century-old guide to military conflict. And one of the more memorable quotes from it, of course, is that the most important battles are not won on the battlefield, and that seems to be driving the Chinese policy, expansive policy, is that they want to regain their stature as a world leader. Of course, they consider the last century the lost century and the century of shame, and to regain that, they want to become dominant in a manner that doesn't involve military conflict, and that's why on so many different battlefronts they are non-military, but they are challenging us in many, many different ways. And it goes back to principles in the art of war, that you don't want to shed blood to win a war.
How can you tell when people actually come here? And I mean, the Chinese, I was mentioning earlier, have made it very, very easy for people to get here, and so have we. I mean, for whatever reason, they seem to have more favored nation status in bringing people over here than anybody else, especially if they got money or so forth. But I guess the assimilation, I'm going to use the example, and again, I don't know all these people. I just have observation, Jeff, and you can tell me. I believe that in some cities you might have some, you know, some bad Muslim cells somewhere that are, you know, jihadists or something. But I look at what's happening out in the Southwest side, where there's a lot of Arab population in Orland. And Jeff, I have never seen, I mean, Audrey has sold a lot of houses to these people and everything, these people. And I can't ever imagine, I mean, I wasn't that coherent when I was young, and my grandparents were, you know, obviously not that far off the boat, for lack of a better term. And I don't know if I've ever seen people assimilate as fast as I see these people. They want no part of going back to Saudi Arabia or someplace.
there is American. I mean, to me, they're more American than I am, for damn, for God's sake. I mean, it, sure. I mean, how do the Chinese that come over here with money, if they're supposed to be this string or two attached, I don't know, do they decide they're American citizens and like it here better and screw China? I mean, or not? How do you ever know?
You know, I wouldn't want to suggest by any means that Chinese Americans, you know, are here for nefarious purposes.
Well, clearly, the guys that were here for three generations know. I mean,
yeah,
it would mean,
you know, yeah, by any means. In fact, they're, you know, such a important part of our culture and our society. But no, the notion that there is influence that the CCP is able to exert on a very, very, you know, microscopic select minority by leveraging those that might be working in intelligence positions or in corporate technology companies where they have access to information, you know, that would be literally a handful of people where that type of influence can be spread. So I wouldn't, that's not in many ways.
No, you're not trying to indict a whole group. No.
Yeah.
What do you do?
But you're right about it making easy. In fact, I even confused when I was speaking with you earlier. I referred to the H1N1 visa, which was a slip. You know, it's somewhat ironic when you think about it, because that's a virus.
Virus visa.
But,
what's the difference?
But there's an alphabet soup of visas that the Chinese arrive under, predominantly the HB1 and S1, S1, S2, S3, S4, S5. There's a lot of different ways that we've made it easy for skilled laborers to come into the country, which is a good thing. I mean, there's nothing negative to be said about that.
Well, it is, unless they're locked into one company for less money than the going price for an American, and they can't go to someplace else where it's more money. It's not exactly, you know, the incredible definition of slavery, but it's some minor definition, right?
Right.
I have a question for you. How would you, you're like the Solomon when you come in, what would you do if you were in the Oval Office, say, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and Bill Gates, you know, I don't know what I think of that guy, but I think he's the world's greatest monopolist, but I know that for sure. But, I mean...
You've met Jeff Bezos, right?
No, I met Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everything they thought they wanted, they bought. They put how many people they put out of business? WordPerfect. What was the other? MapQuest. I mean, anyway. But by stringing one against the other, what would you do? You're sitting behind the big desk. By the way, the desk isn't oval, is it? Just the office is oval, right? I would never been in there, so I don't know. Anyway, so you're sitting behind there, and all of a sudden, Bill Gates runs in. And he goes, "Jeff, or President Joseph, these bleeps." Or every time I put out a new software package, or I buy a Beatle album or something, these Chinese guys got, you know, 98 billion computers over there, and they bought three things of software. Guess what? I think they're copying it. Well, duh. So now you sit there and go, well, what should we do? Should we bomb them? Should we do something? All of a sudden he leaves, and the head of Coca-Cola comes in and says, "Wait a minute. There's a billion and a half people over there drinking a Coke a day. This is great!" Like Belushi said, or what's his name, Flounder said in the movie. This is great. I mean, it is so uneven, and so many people are making dough over there. I mean, I wouldn't want to go and make a speech to the, clearly the Minnesota soybean farmers and say, "Oh, by the way, these Chinese guys are pissing me off. We're not going to send him any more soybeans." I mean, yeah. I mean, this is
tough. Or the NBA for that matter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So how do you? Right. I mean, they're catching us. It's like you and I don't want to fight the idiot on the other side of the bar, but we know he's got an alcohol problem, and we're giving him free drinks, right?
So answer the question, right? The question would be, you'd go after the most obvious imbalances, human rights abuse. But that's tough because of China's influence. You know, I mean, the fact that China's on the Human Rights Committee and NATO is ridiculous. So you look at areas where they're able to exert undue and non-proportional influence. The WHO is one of them. I know that there's Trump haters, and there's good reason to be Trump haters. He's a buffoon, but boy, he does some things that are right.
Yeah, oh, God, yes. Absolutely.
Are we really spending $500 million to support the WHO when China spends $50 million and puts a puppet in there that lies on behalf of China in the response to the pandemic? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, his position on NATO and that companies should finally step up, that resulted in millions and millions of dollars of shortfalls coming back into the NATO treasury because he took a stand there. So the short answer to your question, what's the first thing you would do is look at trade and do something about trade. So, you know, yeah, it was a tough move, and yes, it required pain, and there's no naivety. If you're going to try to, even out our trade imbalance with China, you know that since they're holding all our debt, we're going to have to go through some pain, and that's going to be a couple years of trauma economically to be able to address that problem. But that's why even, you know, hardcore left legislators like Charles Schumer said, yeah, you know, Trump's right to go after China on trade. So that would be the first thing I would do, and it's what he did. And nobody had the balls to do that before.
I would say my concern there, Jeff, is totally one of technique. I think with the Asian, what was the Trans-Pacific part? What was the one that he pulled us out of?
Yeah, the TPP.
Well,
yeah.
The thing of it is China was not in there, right?
Yeah.
Most people think they were. They were not. They were not in there. Yeah. And my way to go about it, because I feel the same way about China as he does, he needs to be the big blowfish in the room. I don't have to be. I would have rather taken all the other people in the TPP and put pressure on them as a group, which I think would have been way more effective and a lot less traumatic for people than the way he went about it. I don't think that we should have, if there's, how many people are in that thing? 50 people? I don't think it's efficient to have 50 different agreements. I think that's insanity. But he seems to think that he wants to intimidate 50 people, like if they're 50 real estate deals in a row. They're not. Because to me, I mean, what's the difference between a Chinese trip? Do they have to wave to Vietnam to not be a Vietnam? Do they got to stop and unload and load it back? I mean, this stuff seems to be way too complicated for him to understand. For him, it's always this one-on-one me across the table with somebody where I win. I just think the style is different. The realization is that he was spot on. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yep. I mean, am I wrong there? But the way he went about it, it's all about him. And to me, that's not the way this works, because you've got all these, there's a bazillion countries out there. They all got to be together. You can't have one deal with this guy, one deal with that guy. All they do is ship one place, something from one place to the other. How do you ever know?
Yeah, well, he's always going to lose a style versus substance debate. You know, he's not defendable on the style side. His substance was right, and he is deserving of some kudos to be the first person to even consider taking it.
Right,
on,
but let me ask you.
Whereas there's so much evidence that China has bought and paid for a lot of our politicians through political influence on K Street. But yeah,
Let me ask you this though, Jeff.
His pact is always going to be
let's dig a hair deeper. Let's dig a hair deeper. And I'll act like I'm Carl for a second, asking you, because you always come up with a good answer. The thing that's really fishy about the whole thing, and that we can't really blame on China, because we're doing it to themselves and they know it. We've allowed our corporations, who line everybody's pockets, and I don't see how you get elected without them, to be honest with you. We've allowed our corporations to essentially offload child labor and offload pollution, off country.
Outsource.
And even you brought up the rare earth minerals. We don't want them here. They're too dirty. So when you send them over there, because we actually mine the stuff here in some areas, in one area in particular, we send it over there to be processed because we don't want the dirt and we don't want the air pollution. Well, they know that. So how is it that 15 years later they turn around and say, hey, if you want this stuff for your TVs, this is what you got to do for us? Well, how do we, but it's so easy, and the time must fly if you're in the Oval Office. That's why I'm not going after anybody, to just go along, and not fight these battles. I mean, look how many years since Hillary, her aborted attempt at health care. Does anybody think that health care wasn't getting worse and worse every year through the remaining part of the Clinton administration, the entire Bush administration? He didn't want to go anywhere near it.
I mean, and Obama, sure, I think, did a crummy job because he lost attention to detail. But the fact is, we went 16 years without addressing it at all. It's got worse and worse every year. And I think these guys love to just push it off to the next year. And I just, somewhere along the line, I mean, what are we willing to do? Are we willing to pay $10 more for our blue jeans and not have a bunch of 16-year-old girls making a plant in China? We don't want that happening here, but we're willing to do it over there because we don't see it. I mean, this is the other side of America. Don't let me see that coal mine. Just deliver the coal, right? I mean, do we really care right now, even now, this coronavirus thing, our politicians and everybody, do we really give a rat's behind how many people or whether people have the masks on in the store that's making us our to-go dinners? Do we really care what it looks like in the kitchen of whatever place we're carrying the stuff out? As long as they don't come by in our neighborhood, and they go home afterward and they wear a mask when they're outside, we don't care. This is where we are all the time. Out of sight, out of mind, Jeff, right?
Yep. Well, and that's why, as you said, it's hard to take on these big issues.
Every time there's somebody who's making
there's
money.
There's no real incentive to, because you can't resolve it during your administration. You can only open the wound and you can't close it. That's another reason why I'm willing to give Trump a lot of credit for trying to take this on, regardless of style approach or tactic approach, trying to take on an issue that would be really hard to resolve in any short period of time without inflicting a lot of economic pain.
But you also,
But I will say one thing, just because of the turn of the events here, that it's not, Biden's running mate is not going to be Harris or Klobuchar or Warren. It's going to be China. And that's how this election will have that's what the GOP clearly is thinking right now, because they're up against a wall here, no doubt, because of pandemic and pandemic response and everything else, and they are going to turn this next general election into a referendum on China, and
they're
gonna
try to
work with.
They're trying to,
particularly with Joe Biden, who's always been extraordinarily sympathetic, almost naively sympathetic to Chinese interests, and then of course the exposure he has with his son, and getting on a private plane and coming back with $1.5 billion for his hedge fund from China. So it's not a topic that he's gonna welcome. It'll make Tara Reid look like a non-issue compared to having to answer for China in the next months.
It is interesting, Jeff. And at the end of the day, I mean, on one hand, you want to give people a break, okay? Especially in a bureaucracy, because people feel if they kick it to the next room, even though the town is burning, as long as it's not their fault, it's okay. I mean, I really do believe in this coronavirus thing, from the Chinese to the WHO to our people right here. I mean, on the one hand, you'd say we got a little bit of a late start. Okay, that's just the way things are. On the other hand, Jeff, I'm getting less and less. Boy, maybe it's just because I'm getting older and grumpier, but I'm getting way less. When I'm paying people for like 100 years to watch out for the next pandemic, and they drop the ball. I mean, I use this quote all the time. It's like the movie Major League. Ricky, this is the out you've been waiting your whole life for. I mean, these people have been sitting around there getting a check for 100 years, essentially waiting for this, and they putzed it.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter. And the lady, they had this, I don't know if you watch, I don't usually, but my store, I usually go to at 7 o'clock in the morning. Myers is now open at 8. So, of course, I'm there at 7. And I had to go back to Audrey's, and of course, nobody, she's not up, the dogs aren't up. So, imagine that, Jeff. So I turn on the TV, and there's a Sunday morning news show I never saw before. Some lady's on there, and she's interviewing this lady who is somehow or another involved with multi different presidents and pandemics and preparedness. And she pulls out this stack of plans, and there's like six or seven of them done by six or seven different presidents over the last like 50 years, how to deal with these things. They're all about inch and a half thick. She goes, they're all just revisions of the one before. They're all the same. They're all everything. She goes, finally, it happens. I guess you could say SARS happened too. And you know what? Nobody even looked at them. They just stumbled around, and it's all right here. How you go about doing it? They didn't do any of the stuff that people for 50 years have said this is what you have to do. They didn't do any of that stuff. She goes, they just totally dropped the ball everywhere. And, sure. And then like, not, and we recovered. We were America. We recovered. I mean, even in World War II, I mean, the Japanese in Pearl Harbor said once the Americans shook the hangover out of their head, they actually fought pretty well, right? I mean, so we're good at that. We recovered, and we putzed 6 to 8 weeks, which were pretty key 6 to 8 weeks. But, Jeff, it's not like we had to go hire these people. We've been paying them not the same person, forever. What do they do all day? And then they recognize something like this, and somehow it gets, you know, I mean, there's going to be blame enough to go around on this thing. I mean, not that it makes any difference, but at least let's fire them. Try somebody new. Don't say what a great job they did. I mean, that's just me. I don't know, maybe because I've been tired of paying taxes and seeing the money go nowhere, I guess. Maybe that's it. Anyway. So, hey, what's the mag this month? What's coming out? We only got a minute or two.
Well, we're working on, you know, two things that are our major focus. At Luckbox Magazine, our next issue is going to focus on a couple of key industries and how they are forced to evolve. We're focused on commercial aviation and some of the challenges that airlines and airports have. I'll be speaking with the chief financial officer of United Airlines later on today as an interview for that publication. So we're looking at the hospitality industry, the transportation industry. We're looking at the porn industry. We're looking at the spirits industry and education, those five verticals, as to how they're evolving and what their new order may look like going forward. We also continue our obsession with the political prediction markets, just because they're fun and you can invest real money and trade in any, you know, almost most of the topics that we've been discussing today. Yep. And we have that podcast called The Political Trade, where we invite active political prediction market traders and investors to share some of their tactics, strategies, and trades. And that podcast has been a lot of fun because we touch on different markets.
All right, we got a dash, Jeff.
The probability of certain outcomes.
Obviously, you get a luck box on our site. One question. Are the new porn films, are they wearing masks?
You know, they are in Pornhub. Apparently, one of the editors was telling me yesterday that Pornhub did a kind of they did a joking site called ScrubHub, which is nothing but endless compilation of.
Let's tee that one up next week, buddy.
Hand washing.
Let's tee that one up next week. S&P futures up 37. Yeah.
So there's like 119. Check out ScrubHub.
I can only imagine. We'll be right back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.